And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd still go. And so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
What a win for Skerry's Harps, Conan. There's only one place we have to start the show. This is 3-7 to 1-10 win against Thomas Davis, who were in the final last year. An absolutely brilliant night for the club. And you were on co-com duty.
I was as far away from the pitch as possible for a big win for that. It was class. Brilliant night. Thomas Davis came up. If they had a won, they were through to the quarterfinals. And last year, they got through to the quarterfinals and went the whole way to the final. So it was a must-win clash. If Skerry's didn't win, basically they were out with one game left, and now it's set up. If they go and beat Roundtowers Lusk, then we are through to the quarterfinal. And we've only been to the quarterfinal once before, and it was under the same manager, Terry McGuinness. So must be the Derry blood in him that's bringing out the best in Skerry's.
Right, okay. And there was an incident in the game that we have to talk about. I'm not saying this had any bearing on the game, but it was a Thomas Davis goal disallowed and they lost by a goal. So you have to take off your Skerry's hat for a minute. So I've seen the footage of this. I saw you tweeting last night, Thomas Davis goal disallowed because player wasn't wearing a gum shield. And, you know, on the face of it, that looks very, very bad. I saw the video of it. It was a brilliant goal by Thomas Davis player. Cut inside two players and a brilliant finish in the net. And as he's running back out past the referee, they have a very, very quick word. And then the Thomas Davis player runs off to the sideline. So as it turns out, the goal was disallowed because that player didn't have a gum shield in. Now, on first view, when I saw it, it looked to me like the Thomas Davis player had already had a warning, because the minute, like, there wasn't much of a discussion. There wasn't like, show me, are you wearing it? Open your mouth, you know, nothing like this. It was almost like the Thomas Davis player, it's like something sparked in him and went, oh shit, and he went running to the sideline. What was your take on it from watching it, or have you seen that video?
Yeah, like at the time and for all of last night, I thought it was really, really harsh. Like, obviously, delighted from a Skerry's point of view, but it was Sean Fennelly from Thomas Davis who got the goal. Like, as you said, it was a cracker goal. He buried it in the top corner out of sort of nothing, really. There was two men on him and he just burst through. And like, the fact then that there was a goal sort of deciding the game seemed especially harsh, and I could see why all the Thomas Davis crowd were very unhappy. They went up to the referee afterwards. And for me, like, the rules seem to be, if a player doesn't have a gum shield, then you order him off and you get a gum shield, and, you know, we get to yellow card if he doesn't comply with that. But, and then I was texting a couple of referees, and it seems to be that the rule is if he was warned beforehand and he didn't put his gum shield in, then the referee was banged to rights to actually disallow the goal. And as harsh and maybe pernickety as it is, like, someone made the point, like, you can't score a goal and hurt him without your hurling helmet, and this is equipment that you need. And the referee was consistent. Like, he did blow up a Skerry's move earlier. Now, Skerry didn't score. They were nowhere near scoring at the time. But earlier in the game, he blew it up because somebody didn't have a gum shield. A sub actually came onto the pitch in the second half, didn't have his gum shield. So sort of a bit of stupidity as well. Like, you know, from the player's point of view, to get caught with something like that. And, oh, like, I still feel really bad. Like, if I was the ref, I don't know if I'd be cancelling out that goal. I would just tell him to go get his gum shield or give him the yellow card or whatever. But yeah, it seemed to be in the right, the referee.
Right, yeah, no, that's a good point, Connor, about the hurling helmet. It is, you have to wear a gum shield. And if he had been warned, which it did look on first viewing, I know we've got confirmation about, you know, from referee that the referee made the right call if he had been warned. But it looked to me like he had been warned because he accepted it so quickly running off the field. It's definitely an unusual one. It's a huge call from the referee. As it turns out, it could be the right call if he had been warned. But at the same time, it's not something I had seen before.
It's a good job that Conan clarified it there, Willie, because the rumour beforehand was that Conan on co-commentary shouted out loud that your man wasn't wearing a gum shield while he was running through on goal. Alerted the referee to the fact that he wasn't wearing it. Not, in fairness, Conan explained it pretty well there, because this is the sort of thing, and like, rightly so, but like, it tends to vary from ref to ref, that they have their things that they're picky on. Yeah. And like, I would imagine, Conan, you might have got more feedback from the players afterwards, but it's the sort of thing that the referee will outline before a game. Do you know what I mean? So the captain will go up for a toss, and then the captain will come back to his team and he'll be like, right, lad, this is what he said. He's going to be picky on, you know, steps or something like that. And you better all have your gum shields in, because he told me that if none of you are wearing it, you know, you'll get your yellow card and stuff like that. So while it still sounds harsh in the circumstances that he actually disallowed, like, you know, he said it to him immediately after he scored a goal. You can't accuse him of being inconsistent on it throughout the game. And if as Conan said, that the ref is, you know, that the refs are saying that he was banged to rights, fair enough that this doesn't happen that often, but the referee was obviously in his rights to disallow the goal. It's just, I don't know, he probably didn't consider at the time, not that it really matters, how important that goal was going to be in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah, massive goal. Talking about goals, the only other game we're talking about other than Skerry's Harps, Wayne is Ballyboden, beat St. Vincent's pretty well. It was 5-11 to 1-17. I think Vincent's got a late goal. Ballyboden stuck 4 past Clontarf. Now they've stuck 5 past St. Vincent's. In St. Vincent's, I think they were 10 points up at one stage. A bit unusual how quickly Vincent's have slipped off the radar a bit, from the kind of domination of Dublin club football to a pretty quick slide, Conan, away from the top tier.
Yeah, Castleknock beat them last year, and then Castleknock got put out by Thomas Davis in the quarters. And actually, when I saw the odds, I just still assume, you know, Vincent's are like, they're definitely, when they were on song, they've been the best team I've experienced in my 3 years in Dublin. And when I saw the odds last night, I couldn't believe it. Vincent's were +3. So I started texting boys, and thankfully none of them took me up on it. But I was like, geez, Vincent's are +3 here to get a result against Ballyboden. I thought they might, especially being at home. And when that came in, that's frightening stuff. And it's 2 weeks in a row now for Ballyboden. And I suppose they're champions for a reason, but just running over the top of a big gun in St. Vincent's, it really shows that Vincent have fallen.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. Right, we'll get on to some news here now, because obviously, well, it's not new news. This happened on Tuesday, where the government have decided that they're not going to increase the limit of 200 people attending. And this is not 200 spectators attending. This is 200 in total attending outdoor events. So this Dr. Glynn, I thought it was a Dr. Hannan. Sorry for my ignorance here now. Is he just standing in for him while he's away on holidays, or how has this Dr. Glynn changed? But anyways, you can answer that when I read his quote. So Dr. Glynn, he's a young enough fella. Well, maybe he's not that young, he says, compared to the other fella. Anyways, we want to encourage people to meet outdoors. Clearly, if you have a small number of people in a large stadium, from a public health perspective, there is no public health issue with that. That makes sense. At least he's accepting that in the stadium, there is no public health risk with 200 people in a huge stadium. I would make the argument you could put 500 in one stand, 500 in another stand, 200 on a terrace, 200 on a terrace, and there'll be absolutely no public health issue. Hinnick continues on. This is Dr. Glynn. The concern is that people have to get to the stadium, they have to go home from the stadium, they have to congregate before and afterwards. We have multiple incidents of cases arising from people sharing transport from households mixing. So their issue is not within the stadium. Their issue is getting to and congregating before and afterwards. And I just wonder how many games Dr. Glynn has ever been to in his life, because is he picturing All-Ireland final day in Croke Park with the whole crowd mingling outside Gill's feckin' pub? Or is he talking about 500 people going to a Moor Park for a club game? People don't mingle outside. Like, I mean, and there's a virus on the loose. What are they going to mingle for? There isn't even pubs for them to go to. Like, I mean, Moor Park is huge. 500 would be completely lost in Portlaoise. They'd be going up at going up in different times. They could go in different turnstiles. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous. In all these big intercounty stadiums, Conan, the terrace has separate entrance to the stand, and both sides of the stadium have completely different entrances. This could easily be catered for. Absolutely, yeah. Easily be catered for.
And remember, like, you're talking about 500 people there.
500? Like, we're not talking about 5,000 could be catered for, Conan.
Yeah. Because, like, that's, like, the bottleneck thing that they seem to be worried about, you know, when people are trying to file out a turnstile, like, is when you have 20, 30, 40,000 people at a stadium. Like, we're talking about 500, and you're saying about 500 getting lost in O'Muir Park. There was 200 there in Skerry's last night, 120 watching, and, like, it doesn't even come close to filling the sideline. Do you know? It's nuts, and there's a big open gate to walk out, and, yeah, like, nobody's congregating down the harbour in Skerry's and then all walking up to the game together, like the like the Austin Stacks fans, like, you know. I don't know. Like, it just seems like there definitely could be more, more done. They try and get a few more people in. I understand the concerns, but if you look even outside the grounds last night, there were almost more people up at the walls, like where there's a shop where you can overlook the pitch, and there's a lot of people there looking down on the main road, looking down, and they're closer together than they would have been if they were allowed into the grounds.
It's madness. It's absolutely madness. It's so disappointing. And from a financial point of view, we'll get to this in a minute, it's just a disaster for the GAA, for county boards, for everything. There would be no supporters at the Limerick hurling games that RTÉ are showing on Saturday night because they're showing a double header. So when you get the double header, lads, obviously the mentors and the teams take up the 200. Like, this is just bizarre stuff. So now, I don't know why Limerick are doing a double header. Maybe it's for TV or something. I'm not sure. So a double header is guaranteeing you having no supporters at the ground, because the 60 players are actually more, 120, like 30 on the four squads, and then everybody else, media, stewards, the whole lot, ends up with nobody at the game, Connor. Like, this is farcical. Now, we all know the cases are rising, and it seems to be clusters in meat factories and things like this, but this is just nonsense, and it's completely destroying the GAA from a financial point of view, and there looks to me to be no good reason for doing so.
I just wonder how the doubleheaders work. How the doubleheader works. Do the two teams that play first, do they have to clear out completely of the Gaelic grounds before, you know, the other teams are allowed in? But that wouldn't work if the throw-ins are at 5:30 and 7:30. That seems a bit strange. But just to go back to what you were saying there about, like, Ronan Glynn, like, the just looking at the language of it, it seems to be, well, if you were to look at it in the GAA context anyway, it seems to be based on habits around maybe inter-county games. I think, as you said earlier, like, if you're going to a county game, you'd have maybe, you know, people from different towns maybe going in cars together, and they maybe might congregate beforehand, as opposed to a club setting where the game is likely to be in the town, you know, where most of the supporters are going to be coming from anyway. So that danger of people congregating beforehand or even travelling to games together doesn't exist. And when you mentioned Portlaoise there, I was thinking, you know, like, it should really be fixed for stadia that can accommodate it. And it seems, you know, we talked about the Gaelic grounds in Limerick and Portlaoise and stuff like that, where you can have, you can separate them. You give them a ticket for a certain stand. You say you have to go in this entrance and you have to leave this exit. You could even, you know, you could even go as far as telling them where they have to park their car if you want to be, you know, that pernickety about the guidelines. And it's just, you mentioned about money there. I think, Willie, that we're probably not going to see the effect of that until next year. I know, like, the clubs are doing the best they can, and counties are doing the best they can to cope. But, like, I think it's next year when we've seen in recent years the cost of training, you know, the costs of training county teams and stuff like that, and county boards just aren't going to be able to afford that now. So while we're seeing the impact of it now already, I think, you know, 6 months, a year down the line, the GAA is really going to feel it in the pocket.
So when you have a situation where Grafton Street can be completely full of people on a sunny day walking up and down, and I was down in Tramore last weekend, and, like, I mean, all the amusements were open. There was a one way in, one way out situation going on, but they were completely mingling. I saw pictures on Twitter of Tato Park, the same kind of thing. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know, restrictions, or there was huge queues to the toilets in the amusements in Tramore. And you're like, why is sport, you know, getting it? You know, huge, massive stadiums that can easily cater for this. It just doesn't make sense. So, like, I mean, you mentioned finances there. So Laois chairman Peter O'Neill and Westmeath chairman Billy Foley have been talking about this, and Michael Deignan has been talking about it as well. So we know the GAA has cancelled all their season tickets for the remainder of 2020, kind of on the back of this news, where they're thinking, if this is the way it's going, well, we're not going to have, you know, many people at the inter-county games potentially in October. Like, the reality is, the country seems to be being run by medical experts who only care about the control of the disease, whereas we should be worried about how the whole country as a whole works. Like, without getting too much away from the GAA side of it, but it would piss you off when you think that 500 couldn't be catered for. It's nonsensical. Anyway, so Laois chairman Peter O'Neill has said, what's happening at the moment with no crowds has very serious implications for us as a county. The championship revenue from the club games was our main revenue. That's what funds our inter-county teams, from minor up to senior in hurling and football. We would have taken 400,000 per annum from our gates. At this rate, it does look as if it'll be down 80 to 85%. Because of COVID, we've been unable to have any fundraisers, which is probably another 100,000. That's looking like maybe upwards of you know, 450,000 the Laois County Board is down. Westmeath chairman Billy Foley went further. He says, the reality is if this continues, there will be no Westmeath County teams in 2021. We will have no money to run the county teams. We'll struggle until the end of this year, and God only knows what's going to happen after that. We're trying to get training fields, and we're budgeting for surplus this year, but we're going to run into something like 200,000 loss. These are county board chairmen saying that they're not going to be able to field teams next year, Conan. Like, this decision is having a huge, huge effect on the GEA. And are these medical experts who are pushing hard on this, do they give two shits about this? They don't.
Yeah, I suppose no more so than they maybe care about some businesses that are in trouble now as
yeah.
well.
They're worried about their reputations, and they're worried about new cases and things like that. Like, I mean, everybody's worried about that. But there's another side to life as well that's been absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, like the only thing I would say about the counties is that these things were run before without all that money. Do you know what I mean? No, it's going to be hard because Dublin are going to have money and Laois might not. And, do you know, but there was a time where people played in the hope that they might get a free jersey at the end of the year, you know, and they organise their own transport, they organise their own food. And maybe it's a bit of an opportunity to try and get back a bit more closer to the amateurism that we talk about. But like, to do that, then there needs to be some sort of equality. Like, there needs to be a cap put on the spending of each team, and the money needs to be divvied out. Like we've talked about before, you can't have one county like Dublin, especially now, just steamrolling everybody because they can make money. Like, but like the problem here, and we've seen it before with the championship restructure opportunity, is the GAA won't act that way because they're still hoping that they'll get some crowds. But right now, we're seeing the effect. Like, the crowds aren't coming in, and the money's not coming in. So I think, in this case, like, yeah, it's really annoying, like, say, what's happening with the crowds. But in this case now, the GAA can see that happen, and they need to act. They need to start making some sort of equality sort of mandatory across the board where everybody has to spend the same amount of money.
Yeah, well, maybe that is an opportunity. Everybody talks about opportunity in this crisis, Conor, that they could go back to, you know, no gear for the players, GPA won't like that. No meals after training, GPA won't like that. No, you know, the local bus company sponsors to give you free bus journeys. And, you know, like, I mean, they could go right back to basics of maybe not when I started playing, but maybe 5 or 6 years before I started playing.
Geez, I'd like to see that. it that kind of raises a good point, because the reality is that the GAA, like, in individual county boards in general, and I think the GAA are going to have to countenance stuff. Like, when you talk about, like, it kind of really brings it into focus when you hear, you know, somebody like the Westmeath chairman there saying that they might be down, what, 400 grand? Or, like, you're talking half a million. And, like, even the, like, I know, like, a lot of counties you're talking about, maybe, I know Mayo in the last couple of years have been spending like maybe 1.5 million on their county teams. You know, there's other counties, especially dual counties, that might be similar. That just can't. That's not going to be able to happen anymore if the revenue streams have been this impacted. Now, it'll be a fair, you know, kind of change of scenery to have to go from that to you know, if you're talking early 90s, maybe late 80s, even before that, where the type of era that Conan is talking about there. But it's I think the Westmeath chairman said it well again when he said that, like, it's, we'll struggle on till the end of the year. But then that's the reality when they're looking at 2021 and thinking, how are we going to finance everything that we have to finance? So it's a stark reality, I suppose, but it's a reality that I think everybody in the GAA might have to get used to the way things are going.
Yeah, it's funny, next year with all the money dried up, all outside managers will respectfully resign from their positions, you know, and maybe it'll go back to that, where you'll just promote some ex-senior player to your senior management team and he's not getting paid and he's doing it for the love of it. That would be a good outcome if all clubs run out of money and county boards run out of money. It's definitely something to look out for anyways. How many outside managers resign their positions next year? So come here, lads, 217 Maurice Shanahan scored at the weekend out of 222. Now, this isn't junior hurling. This is senior championship hurling. 217 out of 222. 14 frees, 1-3 from play, and a penalty he scored that he won himself. So he was an All-Star in 2015. Everybody knows about Maurice Shanahan not making the county squad this year under new manager Liam Cahill. 50 fellas were sent for trials, and himself and Noel Connors made the headlines. Two of the best players, you know, under the Derek McGrath era, who didn't make the squad. And we all know the controversy, you know, that went along with that. So Morris was talking earlier on in the year, and he said, I can't talk for Noel, but one thing is I would have a problem with it is there was over 50 lads given a chance. Myself and Noel were the only two not given a chance. But look, if that's what Liam thinks, best of luck to him. Hopefully we can go out with our clubs and hopefully prove him wrong. But it doesn't always happen like that either. So, like, I mean, what a really nice thing to say from Maurice Shanahan back at the time. I tell you one thing, that wouldn't have been what would have come out of my mouth if that was me after having been dropped. And I can guarantee you that. But anyway, that won't come as a surprise to anyone listening. But, like, I mean, a lovely thing to say. Wishes Liam best of luck. Says I'm going to knuckle down and hopefully I can perform with my club. 217 out of 222, right? So Liam, this is what Liam Cal said at the start of the year. I would believe my panel will always be open-ended. Anyone showing form with their club will be considered. I would have liked to have seen more club games in Waterford to see what was out there. So here we go, lads. Liam Cal says the panel is open-ended. Anyone showing form with their club will be considered. Maurice Shanahan has wished Liam the best of luck and saying, hopefully I can go out and perform my club. Maurice Shanahan has just hit 217 out of 222. I haven't scored 217 in a full season. So, like, I mean, the ball is in Liam's court now, Conan. Can you predict the outcome of this?
Maurice Shanahan will score 223 the next game. Like, that's probably the outcome. Like, I can't get my head around those scoring stats, sort of like you're saying, but this whole thing is close to my heart with Paddy Bradley. He was dropped off the Derry panel as well. And sometimes I feel like, you know, managers want to make a statement where sometimes they talk about we're moving in another direction or we're going for the future. And, like, you know, it's bonkers because if you're having a trial of 50 people, you tell me that Maurice Shanahan isn't among the top 50 hurlers or is worth looking at. Like that quote from Liam Cahill where he's talking about not having an opportunity to see what's out there in the club game. You know Maurice Shanahan's out there. So maybe have a look at him. He's only 30. He's obviously flying. And this is one thing that worries me. If you're always talking about the future and you're constantly building to another point in the future, then there was no point in developing someone like Maurice Shanahan in the first place. Like you went and developed him as a youngster so you could reap the benefits for about 10 years when he's, what, between 23 and 33. Now you have him at that age. Use him. Like, that's why you developed him. But if you're always looking to the future, you'll never have players in their prime. And Jesus, Maurice Shanahan is obviously worth having a look at.
Yeah, well, no, that would be my opinion. Obviously, they had a very turbulent year with Padraig Fanning in as manager, and there was a lot of rumbling about player power and things like that. And we don't know exactly what went on, whether Maurice Shanahan and Noel Connors were involved in that, or, you know, I don't think it might have been 100% hurling reasons that, you know, they might have been dropped. But there's no doubt 217 is definitely putting pressure on Liam Cal. It's always things we talked about, you know, panels being open-ended, and every manager says this, and it's something I have a problem with. And I remember criticising Colin Kelly, the Westmead manager, and he ended up texting me. He brought in a load of lads after the league, and I was criticising it. Now, his hands were tied because he lost fellas off the squad. But I do always have a problem with managers saying they're open-ended. And, you know, players in the October, November, December, January, training like dogs in the rain and the shit, and then playing the league. And then somebody is open-ended. He scores, you know, 110 in a club game, and suddenly this lad's back in the mix after being on the, you know, taking it easy, watching the Champions League the whole winter. Like, I mean, I don't like that, Connor.
No, and I'd be the same. And I think I agree with Conan there. I don't think Liam, when he was talking about Noel Connors and Maurice Shanahan, I don't think at the start when Liam Cal said that, he meant it was open-ended. Liam Cal, to me, and I can't speak for him, but to me, he was making a statement. He was like, right, I'm taking over this team. Noel Connors and Maurice Shanahan were part of the old regime in Waterford. I'm putting in a new regime here, and they're not going to be a part of it, and that's it. But the thing is, like, the one thing is that the whole fact that there's been no inter-county hurling since the start of the year might have solved the problem for Liam Cal, is that, like, if it was the thing that you can imagine Liam Cal trying to bring in them back in at the end of the league instead of championship, you know, just ahead of the championship, whereas now it's nearly like starting a new season, so it probably won't be as big a deal if he wanted to bring in the likes of Maurice Shanahan and Noel Connors. But to me, I would have said that statement was so kind of firm. That was a message being sent out by Liam Cal. But he'd be a brave man if he doesn't bring it back in now after 217. But I would think that's the way he's going to go, and he's probably going to stick with that too.
It's definitely cranked up the pressure on him. There's no doubt about that. But I have a bit of respect for Maurice and for Noel. They didn't go to the media. media. They didn't whinge, they didn't complain. They just kind of knuckled down. Like, I was texting Noel Connors about potentially being a pundit on the show, and he won't even reply to my text, never mind talk to the media. He won't even acknowledge me. But on another note on this Waterford Championship, lads, there's three teams already out of it. That's Ballysagard, Clonae and Tallow. There's actually three teams already out of the Wexford one as well. Clonbawn, Feathered and Rathnure. Rathnure obviously are the big traditional team down in Wexford. They have the most county titles. So it's very surprising to see them out already. They've already lost, must have lost two. But Ballysagard have Stephen and Kieran Bennett, who are two guaranteed starters for Waterford. So by doing the maths, it's 45 days since last week, since they went out, until they can play with the county. Now, isn't this what Paul Flynn was talking about, Conan? Like, I mean, this is outrageous that they can't officially train with the county. Well, it wouldn't be much of a county training, really, if it was just the two of them anyways. But at the same time, you get my point.
Absolutely. And, like, that's what was always so strange about the people who were so firm about this as well. Like, I think the camp was pretty split, like people thinking that the club needed more love and they give them that clear window and the counties can basically just piss off until we're all ready to go back. But now you have players like that who are 45 days, like that's a pre-season for a lot of people, or an off-season for a lot of players. And when you have people like the Bennett's now who are not playing hurling, like, and a lot of people were suggesting that, you know, get rid of the county season entirely. Wouldn't that be great just to have a club season? Well, thank God for the county season that these boys are going to get a bit more, like, you know, a bit more action further down the...
And they can't even play county, like, it's not like league games are going to be going on because the championship is still going on. You know, there's no teams to play against. They are actually going to be sitting idle, which is, you know, it definitely is a concern, and Paul Flynn was right to be pointing that out. Another one was talking, James McCartan was on Tomás O'Shea's podcast. It's Corolla Tomás, and a very good podcast series. I think he's finished now, but that's one thing lockdown brought us. It brought us Brian Carroll, our own Brian Carroll's Hurler's Life, which did very well, and Tomás O'Shea did really well on Corolla Tomás, his podcast series. But James McCartan was talking about other counties, and they're not sticking to it. And he says, if we don't get access to the players, we still have 5 or 6 weeks before the championship. I'm fine with that as long as every other county is sticking to the same rules. Like, I can tell you now, I've seen your inter-county teams that are back training, so it's frustrating. I haven't heard of any, Connor. I don't know if you have, or Conan, for that matter. How do these lads find out that the rivals are training and not report them? Like, I don't get it. Like, I mean, are they supposed to just, I've heard it. Is it guaranteed? Is this Chinese whispers? I don't know.
Well, this was an issue about a month ago, Willie. When it first came up, there was rumours all over the place that that county teams were not only training, but it's in some cases denying their players access to their clubs. They couldn't even go training with their clubs because they were training. So it was brought up in a few places, but it was all Chinese whispers because some people, I know Mike Quirk was fairly vocal on it, and I think another couple of managers, and they said, well, if you're gonna make these accusations, then start calling people out. And I haven't heard anybody, and maybe people are afraid of calling counties out, but like the GAA have encouraged
whistleblowers.
they've encouraged whistleblowers to do it. You don't have to go in the media and say they can do it via the GAA. They've told them to contact us, and the GAA have said, you know, after saying initially that they weren't going to intervene, then they said that there was punishments and they were prepared to mete out those punishments. So, like, I don't know. I've only heard the rumours that James McCartan has obviously heard stronger ones. And, like, you know, I know he didn't name names, but you wouldn't need to be a detective to find out the counties, you know, that he's mentioned are probably closer to home, because he says that, you know, if you're a Paddy Talley and you're hearing that another county you were due to play in the Ulster Championship were training, you certainly would be frustrated. So read into that what you will. But like, until, what can you say about it until people start, you know, until people start actually calling out these people, and then you can actually discuss punishments that they may or may not deserve. And until then, it's all speculation and there's not really a whole lot you can do about it.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think the best ever clip out of Tomás's Corolla Tomás was the Colin Corkery one, hiding on the tram in Cork training, Conan. This was an absolute classic. So anyone listening, I'm sure everybody listening has heard this clip. So Colin Corkery, when they were training with Cork, they used to go on runs or whatever and across the tram line. So Corkery used to, because obviously Corkery wouldn't have been known for his aerobic fitness. He was just pure class. And it's a pity those days are gone. Colin Corkery, probably just a brilliant club footballer if he was around at the moment, which, and that's depressing enough. But he used to get onto the tram and cut off the I don't know, he'd go a mile or two up the road and then he'd get off the tram until eventually he got caught by one of the selectors who got tipped off that he was doing it. I just thought it was absolute classic, because I remember when we were down in Waterford in college and we never did anything like that now, but we'd be sent for laps of the whole Waterford, like the whole three pitches or whatever it was, and one corner would be dark. So we'd lie down in the, you'd run one and then you'd lie down in the long grass and you'd wait until the lads doing the runs would come back up and catch you, and you'd miss out on maybe two laps or whatever. We thought we were really clever doing this, but Corkery's just taken it to a whole new level of getting on a tram to get a lift.
Yeah, and it said he bought a weekly pass for the tram as well, because he would need it. He would need it that often, and when he was caught, the first thing he said to your man is, "Will I put it into the expenses or leave it at that?" So he was actually looking to charge them for taking that, those shortcuts as well. Absolute clinker. And like, yeah, Tomás O'Shea's thing is great. There was a good one with Paul Galvin as well, where he was talking about the attitude of some of the Wexford players just like going away on holidays in New Zealand for a month during pre-season, and he was trying to get them to take a ball with them, and they were just like, ah, you know, I'm going to be driving around New Zealand, I won't have time to do any of the programme or kick the ball. And Galvin, coming from All-Ireland, four All-Irelands or whatever it was with Kerry, just couldn't get his head around it. Like, so no, a couple of good chats there.
Yeah, but in fairness to the Wexford players, bringing a Gaelic football on holidays would totally cramp your style, wouldn't it? Like, give me a break. Like, come on, you don't want to be the loser on the beach kicking the ball around in your GA shorts. Anyways, listen, we'll change this. I've got good and bad news coming out of Tyrone, Conor. Which do you want? Do you want the good news first or do you want the bad news?
Give us the good news, Willie, there, please.
The good news is that Matty Donnelly is back. And this is good news, not just for Tyrone. This is good news for Gaelic football fans. And it's great news tactically for Tyrone, because we know Matty Donnelly and Cottle McShane, you know, form a very formidable full forward line when they're in and around together. And it also gives them a bit of versatility. He was back playing for Trillick, the Division 1 league opener against Clonoe at the weekend. So that's fantastic. He hasn't played. It was a terrible hamstring injury he got last November. So it's fantastic to see him back. On the downside, Dara Canavan has broken his wrist. Frank Burns, Ronan O'Neill and Pádraig Hamsey all went off with hamstring injuries in club games over the past 2 weekends. So there you are. Did the good news outweigh the bad news, or are you unsure?
I think so. Like, Derek Canavan will recover from a broken wrist, whereas you would have worried about, you know, Matty Donnelly's injury is so serious that you might have thought it had lasting implications. But I feel like it makes me feel better to hear that, like, some intercounter, like, I suffered a minor hamstring injury recently, Willie, and I thought it was because of the lack of preparation. But listen, if Frank Burns, Ronan O'Neill and Pádraig Hamsey are doing it, it's obviously not something they're doing better than me, so it makes me feel about a bit better about mine.
Yeah, you know, you can't. Hamstring injuries are just torturous. That's it. They just come, and that's just the reality of it. I don't know how to explain hamstring injuries. I absolutely hate them, but I don't know how you prevent perfectly against them. I don't think you can. Another one, old men. So we mentioned Maurice Shanahan. Dan Shanahan, when you hear this, Dan Shanahan came on for his club, Liz Moore, the day Morris scored the 170 or the 217 or 222. I must have said that about 10 times. Anyways, he's 43 years old. He's a year older than me, Dan is. I thought he was a bit older than me than that. He is playing with his club. This is his 28th season playing senior hurling, lads. Isn't that just outrageous? He started playing senior for his club. I don't know where the senior back in 1993. I was just thinking, I started in 97. He must have been like 16 when he started in 1993 or whatever. So he came on as a sub, and that's at senior intercounty level. John Milan made a comeback playing with the De La Salle juniors. Johnny Doyle, at 42 years of age, played 60 minutes in midfield. So they won at the weekend. And then you had Peter Barry, who's 45 years of age, who played Junior B recently. Four of them caught my eye. And Johnny Dowd, probably the most impressive, although that's intermediate, but he's played the full 60 minutes. The others playing at a lower level. But I don't know, lads. It's almost like it's a drug, isn't it? That some lads, I'm thinking of Mickey Linden playing until he's 50.
Declan Bonner playing up in Donegal there last year.
Oh, yeah, 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 in goals, yeah.
I'm sorry, though, but, like, John Milan should not be allowed to play Junior B at 39. That's a joke.
Well, that is a joke, yeah. And I met him last year down on the beach at Tremor, and he's in good shape. He's not like he's lost. Imagine being a Junior B cornerback. Now, he's probably playing centre forward for the juniors, maybe, but a centre back, whoever it is, and you're marking John Milan. What age did you say? He's only 35?
39, I think he is.
39.
Yeah, but like even at that, like, and as you say, he's in good shape. It's John Milan, and he's playing Junior B, and you're only playing Junior B probably because you like the lifestyle. You're probably coming out hungover, and then John Milan is coming to line up beside you. That's heartbreaking stuff.
No, it definitely is. There's no doubt about it. Last, no doubt about that. Last story here is it's a pretty depressing one, and that's that East Belfast GA club had to. The police came to their training pitches and training had to be called off after the police got a message to say that a package had been left close to the area. East Belfast were formed in May, and they've senior teams, and they tweeted about this that, it was a hoax, and all the players and mentors all left safely. And, you know, it's a little bit depressing when you think about it, Conan, that, you know, some dickhead could, you know, disrupt training, people out enjoying themselves, people out getting fit, and they're doing stuff like this.
Yes, especially in the week that's in it with John Hume dying, like, and everything that he stood for. They have a club who is actually actively trying to encourage people from the other side of the community to come play for them.
Yeah,
and have that treatment. Like, you know, we're past that now. Like, you know, all that work that John Hume did got us past that. We're at a stage now where we can make fun of each other for being Protestants and Catholics and being Unionists and Nationalists. Like, you know, we're all living on the same island. This is just a sport. You know, it would actually be great if East Belfast, I know they're trying to, but they've got a massive recruitment drive to get as many people from that side of the community in, and just to sort of get rid of that attitude towards it now. Because, like, you know, most people, we're all big GA people here, but I'm not a staunch Roman Catholic, and I don't think any less of somebody who goes to a Protestant church on a Sunday. Like, you know, so that stuff is just ancient history, and it is, as you said, it's depressing. So hopefully they can get by it.
Yeah, for me, religion is just complete fantasy stuff. So the idea that people would dislike each other because of some complete fantasy is just bizarre stuff. It doesn't make any sense to me. And yeah, exactly. People need to get over that. There is one last one. So Tipperary chairman John Devan has been talking about the problem of house parties after GAA games, and said it's down to a certain element of people who think the rules don't apply to them. And then the issue was raised at Tuesday night's county board meeting. This is according to Tip FM, with anecdotal evidence presented of house parties occurring after games. Now, I have to admit, Conor, I never really thought about this. And I'm thinking, if I'm in my 20s and I'm after winning a championship game, I'm going to a house with my friends. Like, you're young, you're 20, in your 20s, you've just won a championship match. You'd always used to go to the pub. I don't know. Like, in one way, I have sympathy on them. And in another way, I can see that there's a selfish element to it. Absolutely, if these 20-year-olds are living with parents and stuff like that, if they're living on their own, they have to make their own calls on it. But I don't know. I have sympathy in a small way on both sides.
Yeah, I absolutely do too. I was saying this to somebody in the club lately, that, like, I'm mid-30s now. Like, I've a kid. Like, my priorities are different after a game. I just want to get home and get to bed as soon as possible. Whereas if you're young, there used to be such a buzz after championship games.
Yeah, yeah.
You were mad to, you know, the adrenaline is high. You just want to, especially if you win, you just want to talk. And if you lose, then you want to obviously drown your sorrow. So I do have sympathy. But, like, I suppose you just have to appeal to these people's better nature, and that there is a bigger picture here, you know. And the only thing about this, Willie, I'll say as well, is that the chances of this happening is probably a byproduct now, are probably increased after the decision that was taken with the pubs earlier on this week, when that they have to close at 11 p.m. So there was probably places where you could go for a meal after a game. You could probably stay till maybe midnight, and people maybe a little after, and people might have been happy. Whereas if it's half 10, 11, and, you know, young lads have had a couple of pints, they might get a bit giddy, and then somebody mentions a house party, and all of a sudden then there's loads of people back there. So I 100%, I'm like yourself, I have sympathy, but I suppose we have to look at the bigger picture, and you have to just appeal to these people's better nature, that there's a bigger issue at hand there than just having a few pints after a match and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back with Garode McKiernan.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go home a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know, it was pure luck now, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
All right, so Garode McKiernan made his Cavan Gaels championship debut with 2 points at the weekend, and he joins us on the line now. How's it going, Garode?
All good, Colm, yeah, and yourself?
No, all good, all good. Now, I have to let you know that I'm completely against leaving your home club, any player leaving his home club to transfer to another club.
I think it was you who set the trend, so we're just following it.
So why did you transfer?
Look, it's true. I've been living probably just 5 minutes outside Cavan Town the last, 3 years now, and then just towards the end of last season, it was something I was thinking of, and then I just discussed it with my parents and my close friends, and look, it wasn't a decision that I took lightly, and I know it probably did upset a few people as well, but it was just something that I felt I had to do for myself, and I was just probably wanted to play senior football for a couple of years. Probably my life's probably be based in Cavan for the next 2 or 3 years anyway, and it's just a move I decided to make, and with the support of my close friends and family, so it's okay, it's done now, and I've played a few league games and made the championship debut there on Saturday, so it's all about just moving forward.
Well, that's it, and it sounds to me that it hasn't gone down well in Swan Lynn Bar, your home club, or like is it kind of split?
No, look, in fairness, my close friends, like a family, were supportive of it. Look, understood, and I'm sure there was people at home that were a wee bit disappointed, but like everything else, over time, these things settle down. No, in fairness, since I have transferred, I've probably been home probably more so nearly than ever. So I'm still good friends with all the boys. And there are times that I do probably think I have probably let people down and stuff. But no, in fairness, I have got good support from everyone back home.
So, your old club were relegated to junior last year, so you would have been playing junior football, and I suppose Swan Lynn Bar have been kind of alternating between junior and intermediate, never really making the step up to senior.
We got relegated last season in the league and championship, but we won the junior championship in 2010, and we've been, in fairness, we have been competing in intermediate, probably just the last few years, it probably hasn't been that successful, or we haven't been competing, so got relegated last year. And then, but in fairness, actually, Swan Lynn Bar, they joined at the start of this year with another club from West Cavan, like Corliss, so there's two small clubs there joined together, so things are starting to pick up, hopefully, a wee bit for Swan Lynn Bar as well.
Right, okay, and there's a weird lining out for Cavan Gaels. I see you're still calling Swan Lynn Bar wee.
I suppose that part just hasn't left me. It has been strange, but it has been good in terms. Probably the lockdown probably didn't come at the best of times, so it's just really the last few weeks and getting out to know the boys and they're getting out to know me. But no, definitely it has been enjoyable, definitely the last few weeks.
Right, and Mickey Graham's Cavan Gaels, has he had any influence over this?
No, in fairness, no. There was rumours going around the doors, but no, he had no influence at all.
Right. Okay, you mentioned the lockdown. It's obviously difficult for you to get to know your new teammates, but I was reading that you were saying you enjoyed the time off away from football a bit.
I did. No, in fairness, I probably did enjoy the break. Probably was the first probably break from football that I wasn't injured as such, so it was a complete break. And no, it was enjoyable. I was off work probably for 6 weeks as well, so we just tried to make most of the time and spend with the fiance and friends and family as much as he could.
By the way, I'm going to get onto it that you're getting married in October. I'll get to that in a minute. Is your fiance Cavan Gaels by any chance? Or are we going to get to the bottom of this?
No. I think you may keep on digging.
I'll find out before the end of this conversation what went down there. Claire, I wanted to ask you, because obviously the lockdown, it was enjoyable to be away from it, but then the whole uncertainty, and I was just wondering, you've gone 2 or 3 weeks and then John Horan comes out into the Sunday game and says there's no intercounty football until October. Like, what happens on the Cavan WhatsApp group when this announcement's made? Like, I mean, how did that, how, you know, what was the reaction to it?
I just probably the same as every team across the country in club and county. Everyone just probably presumed there was going to be no football. That was probably in the bleak of lockdown that he made that announcement. But I was sure that there would be no football at all. But like everything else, these things pass by, and you can see that there will hopefully be a championship in October at some stage anyway.
Yeah, I'd say it was difficult to motivate yourself to go out doing those 5K runs. No one likes doing that. I won't say no one, but only a large percentage don't like doing them. It's boring enough for footballers, you know, who get their enjoyment from playing rather than just running. But it must have been difficult to motivate yourself to train with no guaranteed date, you know, in the future.
Oh, it definitely was. But at the start of the whole thing and all, like, the training part of it all was grand because you're probably just doing it nearly at the novelty of it. But then when you're probably 4 or 5 weeks into it, you're probably all thinking, what's the point of this now at all? But just you have to keep the head down and get on as best you can. But you probably realise that there probably things would pass, and thankfully it has, and we can see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, we were talking on earlier in the show about James McCartan talking about some counties in Ulster, you know, not respecting the inter-county training ban. Have you heard anything about that, or is this? We were speculating that's probably Chinese whispers.
You hear different things in different pieces, but it's not really for me to talk about like what other counties are doing or not doing. But yeah. I just know that for Cavan's part, we're absolutely nothing at all. So I can only comment on what we're doing.
Yeah, no, I know that. But you're probably hearing stories as well as James McCartan then, are you?
Everyone hears different pieces about stories. But I'm sure every county tries to bend the rules some kind of way, and I'm sure county managers and all over the country are under pressure and thinking of getting results in October time and stuff. So they probably are trying to do bits and pieces, but it doesn't surprise me that there are different counties back doing bits and pieces. But I just know from my own county we're not doing anything anyway.
Yeah. Okay. How do you feel about being just exclusively with the club then? Like, I mean, no distractions, because we know, like, I mean, a lot of people talk about the season being split. And then there's other people think that they can coexist and you can play county one week and then take a break for club. What's your thoughts on that? Like, I mean, do you think it's possible, you know, to be able to focus on inter-county and club, you know, at the same time?
Yeah. No, I've actually really enjoyed just putting the full focus, like, on the club. Like, you know, you have this 2 month or 3 month window where it's just club football. And it's actually just been, like, enjoyable, even the way I could. Restrooms all aren't open, so it's actually just enjoyable, just and refreshing coming to train and togged out and going home togged out. And you just know you have this focus of the club window, and I probably think going forward it probably is something that they could like look into.
Right, it's like, I mean, because players talk to me about focus all the time. No, I'm just focusing on this, as in, you know, you have to kind of have tunnel vision about the inter-county or the club, whereas if they were going to play one weekend, the other one weekend, it probably would be difficult to have that focus.
Yeah, at times, like, it can be, because obviously when you're involved with the county, you're pushing for your place and that, and the high pressure stakes that are involved in that. When you're going back to your club, maybe in the back of your head, you're half thinking, hope you don't get injured here, but then that's not probably the right attitude, right? And you feel like you're letting and the club down with that mindset as well. So I think the way both club and county doing it are separate seasons, I think it is good going forward.
Here's a question I meant to ask you actually at the start. You know, the way, like, say your club is down at junior level or coming up at junior until you won the junior, went to intermediate. You know, the way in a lot of counties people say people from junior clubs never get a chance. Now, this wouldn't have applied to you because you're an outstanding player, but would you ever have noticed players at junior level not getting the chance because they're playing at junior clubs?
No, in Cavan, no, I haven't noticed that in Cavan. Fair enough, some of the best players for Cavan down through the years have been from junior clubs. Look at you know, we didn't play the last few years. David Gibney's from a junior club, and you have Jason and McLaughlin for a junior club. So in fairness, in Cavan, there's lots of like representation from junior clubs.
Right, okay. Come here, what's your favourite position? Can I guess what your favourite position is And I'll tell you, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. You love playing midfield, you don't mind playing centre forward, and you hate playing full forward. Would I be right in saying that?
You hit the nail on the head there.
How do I know that?
Who was telling you that? I think someone must have told you that.
But like, I suppose this is it. Like, you get a lot more freedom out of midfield, and then you get a little bit less freedom at centre forward, and you get no freedom at full forward. Because I've seen you playing at full forward, and it never really works out for Cavan. You don't get good supply, and you're being double marked, and it's just, it doesn't look enjoyable for you. Whereas at number eight, unless you're being man marked by a wing back or something, you know, traditionally midfielders just go out and play.
Yeah, probably either midfield or centre forward, I'd prefer to be playing. But look, I play anywhere I'm asked. But probably the full forward thing probably hasn't really worked out too well. I think it causes more harm. We've been good in there at times. But look, probably either midfield or centre forward, yeah, where you've a wee bit more freedom.
What do you think when you're in midfield and you see some wing back coming up just to follow you for the whole game? It's like, oh, for God's sake.
I don't know. I can't repeat that. I don't think what's going through my head.
But that's the thing, because like, when you are actually marking a midfielder that is out, you know, to play his own game and you play your own game, that's the traditional way, you know, let the best man win kind of thing.
Yeah, look, I think that's the way all midfielders like to play, like, that traditional way to go toe-to-toe with the midfielder. At times it's difficult when like, you're man-marked and stuff, but suppose you're still trying to find a way to work yourself into the game. But no, that traditional way of going toe-to-toe with your man, if every game was like that, I think we'd be all happy.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, come here, you're getting married in October. Now, you would have planned this out, saying to your fiancé, look, we'll get married in October, right? The weather isn't as good as the summer, but I've got championship during the summer. And look what's after happening.
I know. Well, in fairness, my fiancé plays football too, so she's understandable that way. But no, things probably couldn't have worked out any worse in terms of the wedding and football. We were actually hoping on Tuesday to get the better news from the government with numbers and stuff. So at the minute, we're just not really sure what's going to happen. But at the minute, we're due to get married on the 17th of October. I think that's the first weekend of when the league starts. So
right.
I'll be away that weekend anyway.
So even stuff like sending out wedding invitations, you can't really do that because you don't know how many you can send out yet. Is that it?
No, we actually have like the invites like at the minute. So we're just waiting to hear if we can send them out or anything. But we'll probably have to wait another 2 weeks before to make like, the next announcement. But we obviously know we won't be getting our full numbers that we thought. So we're just not even sure if we're going to be 50 like or like 100. So at the minute, it's just a nightmare at the minute trying to plan it.
Yeah, Jesus, it definitely is. So it's the 17th of October, so you're going to miss those two league games. And then obviously Monaghan, you have them after beating them last year. That's the huge game. Is this going to interfere with your honeymoon, or is that booked, or what's going on there?
No, well, obviously we won't be getting away like abroad or something, but hopefully we get away just in Ireland maybe for like a week or two. But at the minute, probably them two league games. I'm just not really sure what the story is. But definitely the first league game anyway, and then have trained the discuss and the Quincy let me back, so hopefully won't be able too long.
You could go to Greenland on your honeymoon. I think that's on the green list.
Like, you look at that green list and just kind of think there's any like viable options and for honeymoon.
Yeah, no, it's a disaster. Well, it's changing every week anyways. They're all being wiped off it. Greece and Cyprus and all these ones have gone off it. Wait, any word on McVitie? I see he's putting up pictures on Twitter. He's playing Aussie Rules now. And Conor Mina, are they still on the players group or have they left it? Or is there any talk of them?
No, they left the group last season. No, both boys won't be back. So it's just used to it now. In fairness, there are two massive blows to the squad and stuff. So it's always been this happening. Lose both boys, but like everything else, you just have to get on with it.
Yeah, and any word on Clark? Is he going to cut? Because he was taking a year out, but like, I mean, I suppose the year's nearly up now.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard any words since. I know he's back at the minute playing for like, his club team and all, but I haven't heard if he's back involved with us or what the story is. But at the minute, I'd say that Mickey just go with the squad that was before.
Right, right.
Lockdown happened.
And look, I mean, that was the thing. Obviously, he had a terrible performance against Armagh in the first round of the league, but he turned it around brilliantly, in fairness. Like, I presume morale coming off those four wins in a row. I know you lost to Clare, but like, I know you haven't played, you haven't been together in a long time, but it's a lot better than it could have been when you come back.
No, in fairness, it was. Morale was in good place, so we were all going well, but unfortunately, we lost the last game at the Clare, so we're in a position where we can go up and we can go down. So that Clare game was a massive, massive blow, but we did respond very well after that Armagh defeat, because we had a lot of soul searching to do after that. We won the next three games and bounced with good team performances. So we're just in a sticky position at the minute where lockdown came at the wrong time for us.
Yeah, I think it's been a mad year. There's no doubt about that. You're playing again on Saturday afternoon. I suppose I'll let you go here and wish you best of luck getting married. Hopefully that goes ahead, and wish you best of luck against Monaghan. I'm not sure if that'll go ahead. So there's so many things up in the air. But anyways, thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother, Colin. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
But you didn't let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
There's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, lads, so fixtures to look out for this weekend on TV. The big one on Friday night on TG Cahir is Kilcar versus Unions. Very, very good game on paper anyways. Kilcar, obviously, they won it in 2017, and then they went on into Ulster and beat Scotstown, hammered Scotstown, who are a very good Ulster club team. And then they lost to Slochnail in a really good game, and they were red-hot favourites then to win it in 2018, got caught by Niamh Connell, and then got beaten by Guidoor in 2019. So, like, I mean, they've gone off the radar some little bit. They seem to struggle with teams. So I remember watching both those games. The Guidoor one definitely was on TG Cahir, and they seem to struggle big time against teams that put a lot of bodies behind the ball, and that seems to be the way to kind of swarm out their good forward line. They play a very free-flowing football. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure. I don't think Unions play that defensive type of football. So this could be a really good one on paper on Friday night, Conan.
Yeah, Kakar, like, just a classic running team, aren't they? Like, there's so much running power, and they're very exciting when they're allowed to do that. But that you mentioned that game against Guidoor last year. Guidoor just sucked them in, and then they had their points of attack that they were able to hit, and they just hit long, good ball into the forward line and caught them a few times. And do you remember that game last year, actually? Because Guidoor were the Ulster champions, but Kilcar were favourites for that match.
Yeah.
And everyone had been talking them up, and the Guidoor boys weren't happy afterwards. They made a point of saying that it was a joke that the Ulster champions were coming into this game and they weren't favourites, and I suppose probably rightly so.
Yeah, you're right. I think Kilcar generally hammer everybody until they get to semi-final stage and then go in as kind of favourites. A bit like Ballymun Kickhams, for example. They have the ability to run up huge scores. Here, by the way, did you see the result between Sarsfields and Johnstown Bridge after all my talking about them last weekend?
What was it?
Sarsfields 2-17, Johnstown Bridge 10 points.
For God's sake,
I'm giving up on this crowd. Like, that's the truth. Not even Luke Dempsey can save them. Yeah, exactly. So Saturday then, RT are continuing their obsession with Munster hurling. It doesn't matter if it's intercounty or club. So they're showing two Limerick club hurling games. Kilmannock play Haen and Patrickswell play Dunes. So there'll be a huge atmosphere at this one with all the supporters in the ground. So yeah, watch that one. I say Patrickswell versus Dunes is probably the better game. Although they're both pretty good games, in fairness. Sunday then on TG Cahir is Faith Harriers versus Shell Malliers. Shell Malliers, obviously, very good. I hope I've pronounced that right. Very good dual team. Faith Harriers, Lee Chin's club, Derek McGrath's involved in there as well. And then the third game on Sunday is Castlebar versus Briefy. This is a very important game for Briefy because they were beaten by Westport last week, Connor. Lee Keegan, Mark and Aidan O'Shea at full back. So Westport obviously doing to Lee Keegan what James Horan is doing to him and sticking him in the full back line. But briefly, you know, usually in county finals, having won one, but be one of the big teams could be out after next weekend. Am I right in saying?
Yeah, no, that was a huge win for Westport. Like Westport are they're a really common team in Mayo, Willie. They won the intermediate, obviously Ireland intermediate there a couple of years ago. And they've obviously Fionn McDonough, they've Lee Keegan. Interestingly enough, Kevin Keane, Mayo fullback.
He scored a goal.
He played full forward. And he played full forward and he scored, I think it was something like 1-2 or 1-3 as far as I know. Yeah, because we had a game on Sunday, actually, and we were hearing reports of the Braefy Westport game coming in just before we played it. And the other one was that Lee Keegan marked. Now, Aidan O'Shea started at 14. Now, you'd imagine that he wandered a bit and Westport had just detailed Lee Keegan to follow him, whatever. There's a few great photos, actually. Sportsfile had a photographer down kind of watching the two of them. So, but Westport, it's a disappointing result for Braefy, but it's not, I wouldn't consider it a huge shock. Westport really are a coming team. Braefy just about beat them in the, I think it was the quarterfinals last year. So while it was a big result but not a shock. But Castlebar played Charlestown, just about beat Charlestown on Saturday, and weren't really impressive doing it. So Braefy aren't out of it by any means. That group is really interesting. It's Castlebar, Braefy and Westport all in the same group as the group of death. So if Castlebar can get one over Braefy, that's as good as them out, because I would imagine that Westport would beat Charlestown on Saturday as well. But great game to have on TV now, I have to say.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Killy O'Connor got a straight red last week, so Ballintubber drew with Agamore, is it?
Ahamore.
I should have known the Connacht pronunciation of that. It was 1-4 to 7 points, so it sounded like an absolute disaster of a game altogether. Killian O'Connor is suspended for a game. He got a straight red. Very out of character for Killian O'Connor. I think we'll all agree on that one. I'm definitely being sarcastic there. Then we have... Yeah, so we have, they're probably favourites for the Mayo Championship again, are they? Connor, if you're saying Castlebar aren't exactly shooting the lights out.
Well, they weren't on, so these two games were on Mayo GA TV on Saturday. So you'd Castlebar and Charlestown first, and then you'd Ballintubber and Ahamore second. And neither of them were very impressive, Willie, to be honest. I mean, Castlebar did what they had to. Ballintubber would be kicking themselves because Ahamore, probably understandably, against the county champions in their own backyard, went a bit defensive. But Ballintubber were 3 points up for what seemed like about 25 minutes of the second half. And then with nearly the last kick of the game, Ahamore got a goal. It was their first score from play. Actually, in the entire game, was very both teams had got a load of players behind the ball, and Ballintubber had chances, just didn't take them. And I didn't see what happened. Killian and David Kenny, who's also been involved in the Mayo panel the last few years, but the cameras weren't on at the time. But the Ahamore lads definitely made more of a fuss of the incident than the Ballintubber lads, which might suggest that Killian was more of a sinner than sinned against in this incident. But I don't know. Ballintubber is still probably the strongest, but there wouldn't be much between, obviously not much between themselves and Castlebar. But then I'd watch out for Westford and the other couple of teams, and Balladrina got to the county final last year, and Ballinara are starting to make it a comeback as well. They had a very good win on Sunday too, so watch out for them. But if you were to pick, the Ballintubber Castlebar is still probably strongest, but not the gap between the rest isn't as big as it has been the last few years.
I must check Stephen Poacher's Twitter for, I'm sure he congratulated Ahamore on a brilliant performance against Ballintubber. So that's all the games on telly at the weekend. Best of the rest, really. There's a full round of Armagh Championship. Keep your eyes out for that. No huge standout fixtures that I could see. The Laois Championship kicks off. Strably versus Port Harlington is probably the standout fixture in that one. A friend of mine, Greg Ramsbottom, managing Stradbally, and they've a couple of players back. They've been on the slide the last couple of years. Port Harlington probably second after Port Laois at the moment. Cavan Club Football Championship is on. Tipperary Hurling Championship is on. Loughmore Castellani versus Turles Sarsfields, probably the big one. More big games in Kerry, Kenmare versus Dr. Crokes. Kenmare obviously beat Temple Knoll, adds a goal in the last minute. I'm sure you saw that. We were talking up that Classico last weekend. Heartbreaking stuff for Temple Knoll. They play Cairns O'Rahillies again, and Legion, Killarney Legion play Austin Stacks. That's a big Killarney derby. Then we have Kilkenny. Funnily enough, Kilkenny hurlers have a full round of league matches. So whatever way they're doing it is unusual. Galway hurling championship is on St. Thomas's versus Sarsfield. Sarsfield's on television a couple of weeks ago, beating Portumna. St. Thomas's won theirs. And Offaly club football, probably the bigger one for me is Cap and Kerr versus Clara. The reason that is because Cap and Kerr asked me to one of their dinner dances a few years ago, so I have to give them a shout out. Funny enough, Cap and Kerr, they're only a tiny little village. They were intermediate champions in 15, senior B champions in 16, and now they're up senior. It was only their fifth ever game at senior, or they won only their fifth ever game at senior level. They beat Tullamore, who was a big local derby, and Tullamore, one of the big teams in Offaly. So if they win against Clara, I'm pretty sure they'll be out. They'll be going well. It was 1-12 to 1-8. They beat Tullamore by. So that's it. So basically, what clubs learn here is that if you invite me to your dinner dance, you'll get a shout. You'll get a shout out at the show.
Were you the guest of honor, Willie?
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't say guest of honor now. That's way too big. I was keynote speaker. I wasn't actually keynote speaker. I was interviewed. It was a weird one. I even brought Itzy over and all with me. It was, they were all sound. I don't know what the interview. Brian Gavin, was the referee, was the MC for the night. And I suppose I was a guest, maybe, and that was it. And Brian Gavin interviewed me up on the stage, and that was it. Gave a few answers and sat down and ate dinner and had a few pints with them. And that was it. Yeah, very enjoyable. I was also asked up to present medals in Galway. After that, that's it. I'm sure Joe Brolly in one night would do as many as I've done in my whole media career. He would leave one to go to another. But anyway, that's it. Personal information there. We'll leave it there, lads. That's it. We'll be back on. Should we be back this Monday? Definitely. Sure. It's there's no bank holidays this Monday, so we'll talk to everybody then. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.